Israel. When he took over as king, he was a young man, and God appeared to him in a vision and asked him, "What is it that you would like me to grant you?" And he said, "This kingdom is too big for me. This is too big of a task. Grant me the wisdom and understanding to be able to rule over this people with wisdom." And so God said, "Because you've asked that, you could have asked for wealth. You could have asked for safety for the kingdom. You could have asked for many other things. But because you asked this unselfish request," he says, "I'll give you the wisdom and the understanding, but I will also grant these other things to you." And as we went through just a quick overview of Solomon's life last week, we saw that his kingdom was a kingdom that was at peace with all of its neighbors, and they came and paid tribute to him. He had great wisdom, and notables from all around the world came to him seeking out his wisdom and observing his wisdom and his wise counsel. He spoke on all kinds of topics, including horticulture and science and all these things with the wisdom that God had given him. He was blessed beyond any other king that ever ruled in Israel, and wrote several proverbs, several songs. You know, he's just this amazing, amazing guy. But he gets off base, and God had warned him and warned all the kings of Israel not to take to yourself foreign wives and to multiply wives to yourself, because they would lead you astray. And it says that Solomon didn't do what God had commanded him to do. And so we find that he gathered wives, 700 wives, 300 concubines or mistresses to him. He ends up building altars to their gods all throughout Israel. He worships at those altars with his wives and gets led astray. You know, so we don't know how he ended. We know he passed away and he ruled Israel for 40 years, but we don't know if he ever repented. The book of Ecclesiastes is a book of Solomon going on a quest to find out what is meaningful to mankind under the sun, apart from a relationship with God. And he determines that it's vanity. It's all vanity, which means emptiness. Or as one commentator put it, soap bubbles. You know, they just kind of float up in the air and then they pop and they don't exist anymore. And so Ecclesiastes is a record of his quest to find out what is meaningful to man under the sun, apart from a relationship with God. And it's interesting, and we'll see this today, that as he goes through and he lays out a lot of the things that he's involved in and his conclusions, his conclusion is life without God is meaningless, but life with God has meaning. You know, and so we'll follow his and continue following his quest today. Back in chapter 1, we'll not going to read the whole chapter, but just a couple of highlights to kind of get a running start into where we are. Verse 1, it says, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem." So he identifies himself, not by name, but we know that it's Solomon from all the things he speaks of about himself. "Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." Or emptiness, emptiness. Everything is emptiness. Soap bubbles, soap bubbles. Everything is soap bubbles. And he asks this question, and here's what he's trying to really get an answer to. "What profit has a man from all of his labor, from everything he does, in which he toils under the sun?" And that term "under the sun" means without God. You know, the stuff that man does in his natural state. You know, it's not under heaven, you know, but it's under the sun. And so what profit is there in what man does under the sun? And as we go through this, you'll notice that the things that Solomon pursues are very self-centered quests. They're not God-centered. They're not other-centered. And most of the world and most of our culture is seeking after these same things. You know, we just went, I don't know what decade it was, but we had the me generation, you know. And now it's the iPhone, you know. It's all about me, you know. And my pleasure, what can I get for me? What benefit can I get out of this? You know, what's it going to do for me? And that's kind of where Solomon is searching. What can I do to satisfy myself and have a meaningful experience that's going to be lasting? Experiences are fun. You know, the Bible in the book of Hebrews talks about Moses and said that he chose not to follow after the sin that gives pleasure for a season. Sin can be fun. Pleasure seeking can be fun, or else it wouldn't, you know, nobody'd be doing it. Problem with it is there's no lasting effect. You know, the Eagles are on a quest right now, you know, and I'm not going to be prophetic, but if they should win the Super Bowl, all the Eagles fans would be jubilant. There'd be parties, there'd be everything else going on, you know. But it would only last as long as their next loss. and then the soap bubble pops, you know. It's the way life is when you're self-seeking. I was thinking this week of amusement parks. When I was a kid, the big amusement park in the area was Willow Grove Park. And they had the old wooden framed roller coaster, you know? Well, today, and I was afraid of that thing when I was a kid. Today, there'd be no way you'd get me on most of the roller coasters that are out there. You know, they keep making it bigger and more thrill-seeking and more, you know. Now, you know, unless you've had a heart attack three times on the drop, you know, it's not. Because man is still seeking more pleasure. Okay, that wasn't enough. Now I got to go to the next level. Now I got to go to the next level. Now I got, you know. And you wonder where it's going to stop. I had a motorcycle when I was a kid that did probably about 120 miles an hour. Never had it there. But it did if I wanted it to. Now they make them that'll do 220 miles an hour street bikes. And I'm thinking, why? You know, legally you can only do 70, but they want them faster and faster and, you know, more thrills, more. Because man is seeking after pleasure and it's not, there's no satisfaction. After the last ride, okay, now I got to do it again, but I got to do it faster this time because that last one didn't satisfy me enough, you know? And so there's a constant quest for pleasure or knowledge or wisdom or, you know, and under the sun, it's vanity, Solomon concludes. In verse 12 of chapter 1, he says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under the sun. Now, it's interesting here. He's not just going out purposelessly to seek out pleasure and see what kind of thrills he could get. He's actually doing a research project. And he's doing it not by just observing, you know, other people, but he is firsthand involving himself in the quest. He wants to know firsthand because he's got more resources than anyone else has anyway. He's got the ability to do, and he'll say, anything I set my eye on, that's I went for it, you know, because he had the ability to do it. So he is throwing himself into this research project 110%. Because he wants to know. He wants to find out for himself. He's not satisfied looking and watching. But he's not doing this aimlessly. He's got a purpose in this. I want to find out what happens. You know, I had a son that, I have a son, who when he was little, you would tell him, don't do this. And he would have to do it just to find out why you told him not to do it. And then, after he had a bad consequence, he would do it again just to make sure he, you know, kind of like Solomon. I got to find out for myself is where he's at. He says, I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom You know, this wasn't a random. He says, he was going through these experiences and taking notes. You know, all right, I did this. What was the result? Vanity. Poof. Nothing lasting. Concerning all that is done under the sun, this is a burdensome task that God has given the sons of men by which they may be exercised. I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I commune with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness, and I've gained more wisdom than all who were in Jerusalem before me. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I perceive this also is grasping for the wind. For much wisdom is much grief. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. I guess what he's saying here is sometimes ignorance can be bliss. The more you know, the more you go, oh, I wish I didn't know that, you know. Chapter 2. I said in my heart, come now, and I will test you with mirth. Mirth is joy, gladness, gaiety, pleasure. It's seeking after pleasure, you know, trying to satisfy himself with merrymaking and partying and, you know, whatever would bring someone pleasure. That's what he went after. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. That's what he says to his heart. But surely this also was vanity. And I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? You know, after he'd gone through and he had done pleasurable things and he had, you know, gone to comedy clubs and, you know, whatever was brought him laughter, you know, at the end of it, he said, well, that was nothing, you know, it's over. Now I'm back to where I was when I started, you know. I got some memories and I can laugh over some jokes and things like that, but, you know, there's no pleasure in it now. What did it accomplish? What good did it do? He said, I searched my heart on how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom and how to lay hold on folly. So he wasn't just going out and randomly getting drunk, but he was purposely experimenting and drinking and finding out what are the results, you know, what happens. And later on, he'll tell us about that. And how to lay on hold on folly until I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. In the book of Proverbs, he gives us some insight, and we don't know if he wrote Proverbs before Ecclesiastes, Ecclesiastes before Proverbs, but he gives us some insight into the wisdom that he had gained in regards to mirth and merrymaking and drinking wine and these things. So let me share a couple of Solomon's insights with you. Proverbs 14, 12 and 13, it says, there is a way that seems right to a man. That's what he's looking for, the way that seems right to a man. But its end is the way of death. Even in laughter, the heart may sorrow, and the end of mirth may be grief. And so even seeking after laughter and seeking after mirth and pleasure and these things, he says, you know, the end of that, the end result may be grief and sorrow. Proverbs 20, verse 1, he says, wine is a mocker. Strong drink is a brawler. And whoever is led astray by it is not wise. Proverbs 23, 29, verses 29 to 35, he says, who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? He probably wrote this one after one of his binges. Those who linger long at the wine, and those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red. You know, it's like, looks really good in the cup. You think, ooh, that smells great. You know, let me take a sip. He says, don't look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. And, you know, any kind of temptation looks like this. You know, if we looked at something that Satan holds out to tempt us with, and what we saw was the end result, more than likely we wouldn't be tempted to go do it. But it's the sparkle. It's the sniff. You know, it's, oh, this is a good thing. You know, this is, oh, wow, this is really, you know. But Satan never shows us the end result. You know, he never shows us the hangover. He never shows us the broken homes from a family that's been broken up by alcohol or gambling or, you know, wherever it might be. We never see that. You never see those on commercials, you know. By law, there's these warnings that go by real fast that you need to slow down your VCR in order to understand them, you know. It's like, if you have a gambling problem, you know, it's like, what was that, you know? I don't think that's ever stopped anyone from going out and dropping some money on a track. So he says, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. He says, don't even look at it. Don't even be tempted by it. You know, Paul gave Timothy some great advice. Flee temptation. Don't even go there. You know, that's what Solomon is saying here. Don't even look at the cup. You know, don't take the sniff. Don't be tempted by it. Flee it. Nothing good could come out of it. He says, it swirls around smoothly. It sparkles in the cup. But at the last bite, it bites like a serpent. Stings like a viper. Here you think, okay, he must have had a personal experience here. He says, your eyes will see strange things. They used to talk about, what, purple elephants or something? I forget what the... And your heart will utter perverse things. Things will come out of your mouth when you are intoxicated that you would never say, you know, in a state of sobriety. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or like one who lies at the top of the mast, saying, they have struck me, but I was not hurt. You know, you don't feel anything. You get beat up, but you don't even feel it. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. And when I shall awake, or when shall I awake, that I may seek another drink? I know somebody that, before they got saved, went on out drinking with some friends and woke up by himself in a hotel room in New York City and has no idea how that happened, you know. Somehow that doesn't appeal to me. I don't know. But it must appeal to some people. And so he warns there. Proverbs 31 is interesting. It says, the words of King Lemuel. The name Lemuel means belonging to God. There is no record in the Hebrew scriptures of a King Lemuel. Some think that it might have been a symbolic name for Solomon because it says belonging to the king. But this King Lemuel, whoever he might be, is taught by his mother not to drink. It says, the words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him. It is not good for kings, O Lemuel, it is not good for kings to drink wine. So if this was Solomon, you know, he wasn't even heeding the word of his mother, you know, when he went out to test out the wine. Nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all the afflicted. In other words, you'll go do something really stupid. And you see King Herod that had a party, and you know all of his noblemen and all were there drinking and all, and so his stepdaughter comes out and dances, and he promises, whatever you want, I'll give to you. And she goes back to her mom and says, what shall I ask? He's the head of John the Baptist. It says he was sorry that he had promised that, you know. Saying something, you know, as a king that was foolish, and now he stuck to it. You know, he had to keep face with the nobleman and all. And so, a warning against kings from drinking wine and intoxication. Proverbs 19:1-3. Better is the poor who walks in integrity, the one who is perverse in his lips and is a fool. Solomon says in verse 3 of chapter 2, he says, he sought to lay hold on folly. Folly is foolishness. So he tried pleasure, mirth, things that would bring him laughter, drinking wine. Now, foolishness, doing stupid things. Hey, maybe, you know, walking around being a fool, would, you know, maybe there's some worth in that. You know, he even tested those waters. And he says, better is the poor who walks in integrity than one who is perverse in his lips and is a fool. It's a psalm. In the Psalms, it says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And so someone who is a fool is walking around as if there is no judgment. There is no God to answer to. So he can do whatever is right in his own eyes. That's kind of where Solomon is going here with some of the things he's testing out. As it is not good for a soul to be without knowledge, and he sins who hastens with his feet, the foolishness of a man twists his way, and his heart frets against the Lord. That's what it says in the New King James. The New Living Translation puts it this way. People ruin their lives by their own foolishness, and then they're angry at the Lord. Did you ever meet somebody like that? They're angry at God because of something that happened to them because they were stupid. Why would God allow this to happen to me, you know? You did it to yourself, man. Wake up. And so Solomon testing these things and come up and say, man, it's all vanity. It's just a puff of smoke. Yeah, there was fun. There was pleasure, you know. There must be some fun to these things or people would never do them. You know, if you know that running into a wall is going to hurt, you don't intentionally run into a wall, you know. I wouldn't think. Unless you're a football player, maybe then, you know. But so there must be pleasure here for people to pursue this, these things, you know. But when they're done, when it's over, when you wake up the next morning, you know, I need another drink because the last night hurt, so I got to medicate myself again, you know, kind of thing. Vanity of vanities. Verse 4, chapter 2, he says, I made my works great. So now he sets aside merry making and partying and drinking and all, and he sets himself onto building projects. Maybe if I build great monuments and I build great buildings and houses, maybe there's some satisfaction there. I've got some friends who are builders. And it must have been easier to build things in Solomon's time because just to build a house, they've got to go through so much red tape, and it's amazing. You look at some of the building projects that Solomon got into. Turn with me to 1 Kings chapter 7, and we'll see his building pursuits. 1 Kings 7. In chapters 5 and 6... he records the building of the temple. David had wanted to build a house to God because at that time, David was living in a palace and the Ark of the Covenant was sitting in a tent there in Jerusalem. And David's heart was, I want to build a house for God. And God said, well, you're a man of blood. You've been a warrior, you know, and you fought battles and all. Your son will build the house. And so David went about the task of gathering all of the materials, but he left it to Solomon to build the house. And so chapters 5 and 6 talks about the building of the temple and the kind of materials and the courtyards and the gateways and things that went into it. And in chapter 6, verse 38, the last verse of the chapter says that it took 7 years to build the temple. Chapter 7 says, but Solomon took 13 years to build his own house. So he took 7 years to build a temple, almost twice as long to build his own house. It must have been amazing. And so he finished all his house. And then when he got done that house, he built a hunting lodge. He also built a house in the forest of Lebanon. Its length was 100 cubits. Now, a cubit is 18 inches, so 100 and some feet long, 50 cubits wide. Its height was 30 cubits, so it's about 45 feet high. What's that, four stories? With four rows of cedar pillars. Now, this is his hunting lodge. This is the one that's out in the woods in Lebanon. It has cedar beams for its pillars. It was paneled with cedar above the beams that were on 45 pillars, 15 to a row. There were windows with beveled frames in three rows, and a window was opposite window in three tiers. You know, so he's got windows in three of the floors. All the doorways and doorposts had rectangular frames, and a window was opposite windows in the three tiers. He also made the hall of pillars. Its length was 50 cubits, its width was 30 cubits, and in front of them was a portico with pillars. A canopy was in the front of them. Then he made a hall for the throne, a hall of judgment, where he might judge, and it was paneled with cedar from floor to ceiling. And the house where he dwelt had another court inside the hall of like workmanship, and Solomon also made a house like this hall for Pharaoh's daughter, whom he had taken as a wife. And all of these were of costly stones cut to size, trimmed with saws inside and out, from the foundation to the eaves, and also on the outside to the great court. The foundation was of costly stones, large stones, some 10 cubits and some 8 cubits. And above were costly stones, hewn to size, and cedar wood. And the great court was enclosed with three rows of hewn stones, and a row of cedar beams. And so was the inner court of the house of the Lord and the vestibule of the temple. And so he went on these great building projects, you know, and he wasn't building, you know, a five-room ranchers, you know. He was building huge homes for himself, for his wives, you know, this lodge in the forest of Lebanon, and a court of judgment, and he's going on and on, you know, and building and building and building. With the quest and the thought, is this going to satisfy? You know, when a man has done all the building projects, you know, does he look back and now is he satisfied? You know? And so let's go back to Ecclesiastes and find out. So verse 4, he says, I made my works great. I built myself houses and I planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. You know, we'd seen last week in 1 Kings that he had studied horticulture and was talking about all kinds of plants and all. Well, he had planted them, and he was observing and experimenting probably and crossbreeding and do all the things that horticulturists do. I made myself water pools, fountains, from which to water the growing trees of the grove. And I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold, and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. You know, last week we read that gold, silver was so plentiful in his house, in his kingdom, that it was disregarded. It was like asphalt, you know, because he had so much gold and so much wealth that silver was like, no big deal, you know. He said, I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. And also my wisdom remained with me. This is an amazing statement. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. Whatever he wanted. I like that yacht. I'll take that one. You know, I like that. You know, let me have 15 of those, you know. And whatever his heart desired, he had the resources and he acquired them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward from all my labor. It's interesting. He's basically saying here is, I worked hard and I played hard. I rewarded myself with pleasure for all the hard work I was doing. You know, sometimes we get like that. Man, I've worked so hard, I deserve, you know, to do this or to eat there or, you know, whatever, you know. Well, he had all the resources available to him. I just spent 13 years building a house, so let me party for a year, you know. Reward myself. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which they had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. When the project was over, he looked at it and went, I got to build a bigger one. Because I'm not satisfied with that anymore. You know, it didn't fulfill what I was hoping it would fulfill. You know, my name's on the cornerstone, but what good's that do? There was no profit under the sun. So then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who succeeds the king? In other words, if I've done it all and I've come to these conclusions, the guy that comes after me, he's got nothing left that he can pursue or do that I haven't already done. He says, only what has been done already. Then I saw that wisdom exceeds folly. You know, after pursuing folly and foolishness, he came to the conclusion, well, wisdom's better than foolishness. You know, at least there's that, you know. I'd rather be wise than a fool. As light excels darkness, a wise man's eyes are in his head. In other words, a wise man sees where he's going. But the fool walks in darkness. Yet, I myself perceived that the same event happens to them all. In other words, whether you're a fool or whether you're wise, in the end, you're going to die. So what good is it being wise? He'll ask that question. So whether you pursue folly or you pursue wisdom, you know, you're going to die in the end. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. I'm the wisest man in the whole world. I have more understanding of everything in the whole world. And at the end, we're both going to be in the grave. And why was I then more wise? You know, he says in verse 18 of chapter 1, all my wisdom did was give me more headaches, you know. So was I really that wise if we're all going to end up the same way? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there's no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool forever. Well, he doesn't quite have that right. You know, we're still reading his writings. Since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? Just like a fool. Therefore, I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me. For all is vanity and grasping the wind. Again, everything he's done up to this point, the pleasure seeking, the even seeking after wisdom and understanding and dabbling in foolishness and all the building projects and all, it was all centered around himself. What can I get out of this? You know, and a man who pursues life for his own pleasure is going to come up empty. You know, he's never going to be satisfied. So he's looking at life under the sun, saying, you know, this gives you nothing. It's grasping the wind. I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun. He comes to this conclusion, because I got to leave it to somebody else. I can't take it with me. I've done all this work, and somebody's going to come after me who hasn't done anything and going to inherit it all. Let me read the rest of this. And who knows whether he is wise or a fool. Now, his son ended up being a fool, because when his son took over the kingdom, his dad had laid pretty heavy obligations on the people of Israel in order to support all of his building projects. And so they were taxed pretty heavily. And so when his son took over the kingdom after Solomon's death, he brought in his dad's wise men and counselors. So let me ask you guys a question. He said, you know, you've been around my father. You've seen all that's going on here in the kingdom. I want to, you know, be on the good side of the people here. What should I do? Should I ease up the taxation that my dad laid on them? And they said, absolutely. If you unburden them, then, you know, nothing new under the sun. If you unburden them, then, you know, you would be a wise king, and you would be a king that they would rally behind. Then he brought his friends in, a bunch of young guys, asked them the same question. And their answer was, oh, no, 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 no. You've got to show these people who's boss. Tax them more. And so that's what he did. And ended up, there was a tax revolt. And 10 of the tribes, the northern tribes of Israel, split off and said, you know, we don't want this taxation on us. They actually killed the tax collector. Having been one, I'm not sure how I feel about that, but lost my screen here. Excuse me a second. Technology. But his son was a fool. And he says, I don't know if, you know, I leave here, I die, and then I don't know if the guy that's going to acquire all the fruit of my labor is going to be wise or a fool. And yet he will rule over all of my labor in which I toiled and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. When I was a young accountant, in my first accounting position, I was out with my boss. We had visited a client, and we went out to lunch. And a man came over to him, and he was talking with my boss. And after they were done talking, the guy goes over and sits at his table. My boss says, see that guy I was just talking to? His dad used to be a client of mine. He says his grandfather started a business, and it was fairly successful. His father took it over and grew it, and, you know, it was very successful. The son took it over, this guy he was just talking to. He ran it into the ground, and they had to go out of business. Now he's a business consultant. Give me his name. I'm going to make sure I never call him, you know. That's what Solomon feared. He says, I've done all this work. You know, I've built my business. I've built my, you know, my kingdom and all. And I might be leaving it to a fool who's just going to run it all into the ground. And everything that I'd built up is just going to disappear anyway. You know, so that's vanity. You know, there's no lasting benefit to this. That's also vanity. He says, therefore, I turn my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. So, like, he's looking at his buildings, he's looking at his kingdom, he's looking at all this going, I'm going to die and leave all this to my kid. I can't believe it. What was the point? He says, there is a man, verse 21, whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. And yet, he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and great evil. For what has man for all his labor and for all his striving, all the striving of his heart for which he has toiled again under the sun? You know, man without God, man doing all this for himself, building his own kingdom, you know, building his own buildings, having his name put on the, you know, having his bank accounts and his inheritances and all that kind of stuff that he's going to leave. He said, I'm really depressed. Because this is all vanity under the sun. For all his days are sorrowful and his work burdensome. Even in the night, his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. This is a word to the self-employed. If you're self-employed, chances are you're not getting a lot of rest at night because you're laying in bed thinking about the next job, thinking about how you're going to pay your bills, thinking about, I got to bill this guy, I got to quote that guy. Your mind never rests. You self-employed guys know what I'm talking about. A friend of mine did a big job. He was moving a historic piece of equipment. And the whole job had been in the planning for months and months and months. And he quoted it out, gotten the job, had it all laid out and all with all his men and had all the equipment and stuff. And I know him. And I said to my wife the night before the job, I said, you know what he's doing tonight? He's laying in bed trying to figure out if there's a better way to do it. So they did the job. It was successful. Television crews were actually out. It was pretty significant. Out filming the whole thing. And it was on the 6 o'clock news and all. Next time I saw him, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, the night before the job, I said, what were you doing? What were you thinking? He says, I was laying in bed thinking if there was a better way to do it. And he says, and there was, and I changed the whole thing the next morning. He said, I got all the guys together. Said, we're not doing it the way we planned. We're doing it. So he says, there's no rest at night for a man who is laboring under the sun. So this is also vanity. And then he comes to a different conclusion when he brings the Lord into it. He says, nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind, the labor of the sinner who is out there laboring. But he says, the conclusion of this is that if a man realizes that his work and his labor is a gift from God, and whatever he eats and whatever he drinks and wherever he works, he gives God the glory for, there's meaning in that. He's talking about a balanced life. You know, Solomon took everything to extremes. You know? I'm going to go find out whatever my eye sees, man, I'm going to run with it. I want to build a huge building and take 15 years, I'm going to do it. If I want to buy whatever, you know, pleases me, I want it. If I want all the entertainment and all, I can hire it. You know, he would go to the extremes. And he says, you know what? The gift of God is food, drink, a job that you enjoy, and give God the glory for it. You know, doing it for his glory. Instead of what I can get out of it, how can I glorify God in this? And I got convicted one time, I think I've shared this with you guys. You know, when I used to work down at IRS, I was on a shift that ended at 7 o'clock at night, and there was this little cleaning lady that would come in, and she'd be mopping in the bathrooms, singing worship songs, you know. I got so convicted because I'm sitting there going, I hate this job. I can't. And she's in there mopping floors and cleaning toilets, singing unto the Lord, you know. That woman had a meaningful job. because she was doing it for the glory of God. You know, and so Solomon again says, nothing is better, verse 24, than that a man should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat and drink more than I? And I've gone to the extreme with this. God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. As someone who is living his life to please the Lord and not himself. God grants the gift of enjoyment and meaningfulness to his life. We'll finish with this. Paul says in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 10:31, therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. You know, not for yourself, but for God's glory. You know, as we do things to the glory of God, we get satisfied. You know, the Lord gives our lives meaning and purpose. Colossians 3:17, and whatever you do in word or in deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And Colossians 3:23 says, whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. You'll receive your reward from the Lord, you know, even if you don't get any reward from your labor down here. So, life apart from God, Solomon says, is vanity. Life lived seeking to please the Lord has meaning and purpose. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for